As we approach summertime, we reflect on another time period of isolation. Last June marked the 45th anniversary of the end of isolation in the Kalaupapa settlement for leprosy or Hansen's disease patients. The residents who had endured permanent quarantine because of their contagious disease moved into the remote settlement, and most died there. We reached out to local historian and author John Clark to talk about the parallels with our seclusion due to COVID-19. We also talked to him about his research on his book, Place Names of Kalaupapa.
They were physically removed from all of their homes. They were, you know, sent to Honolulu where they were processed, and then they were sent over to the Kalaupapa Peninsula. And they just lived there for the rest of their lives. And most of them, in fact, almost all of them, never saw their families again. And if they had children there, the children were taken away from them when they were infants and given to family or friends or to an orphanage, as the case was.
Yeah, for someone else to raise.
Exactly.
I think there was a letter that someone wrote. It was a lament for their son, where she talks about the umbilical cord is cut.
Yes.
And just the heartache of that separation.
Exactly. The babies were taken away from their parents almost as soon as they were born.
There's also another point in the book where I believe they had passed a law saying that if your spouse came down with leprosy, with Hansen's disease, that you could file for a divorce.
Oh, yeah. I guess that happened a little later, you know, in the history of Kalaupapa, but that was true too, because it was being sent there was just like being, you know, it was like the person died. I mean, the lack of contact was absolute. So I guess the law just regarded it as, you know, the person was no longer accessible to the spouse.
But there were spouses who said no, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, and they went down to Kalaupapa to spend the rest of their lives with their loved one.
You're right. They were called kokua. You know, kokua in Hawaiian means help, so the kokua were helpers, and most of them were just what you described. They were usually spouses or family members, but they actually had to apply to the Board of Health and get permission to be a kokua, and if they did get permission, they were allowed to go there and live with the patient.
So talk about this book, that your most recent book, because you did something a little different, right? You use letters from the residents of Kalaupapa that were sent into the newspapers, so they were Hawaiian language newspapers.
Yes. Well, I named the book Kalaupapa Place Names, and place names and their mo'olelo, the stories behind the names, have always been of interest to me. So what I did is I just made a master list of every place name I could find on the Kalaupapa Peninsula, and I started looking for those names. I started searching for them in the Hawaiian language newspapers. They're online and they're searchable. So anyway, what happened was, as I was searching for articles about and stories about these place names, then all of these letters and articles and all of this stuff that from the patients themselves started coming up on my searches. And the amount of information that I gathered, especially, you know, directly from the patients themselves writing back to the editors in Honolulu, was just phenomenal.
And your book is dedicated to the memory of your great-great-grandmother.
Yes, you know, Catherine, it's quite an interesting story. I had done all of this research and gotten all of the articles translated. I wrote the book. I submitted my manuscript to the UH Press, and the book was already moving. It was already moving through the production pipeline. And out of the clear blue, I got a call from a relative here on Oahu, and she had a question about family genealogy. So anyway, we talked story for a little while, and then she asked me, she said, "Well, what are you working on right now?" And I said, "Oh, a book on Kalaupapa." And she says, "Do you know that you had a relative that was a patient that was sent to Kalaupapa?" And I said, "No, I had absolutely no idea." So anyway, she told me the story, and it turned out to be my great-great-grandmother, and so I dedicated the book to her.
And that's Emily?
Yes, Emily.
And gosh, were you able to try and do a deep dive on her story and what her experience was?
It was, well, even more interesting than the story I just told you is that When my relative here on Oahu told me her name, Emily, I recognized it immediately because I had seen it in one of the articles that was in the book. And one of the article that had her name in it was an article that listed patients who had died in the year 1885. So using that and using her name, I tried to track down information about her, but there wasn't much. There wasn't much at all. When I was researching my Beaches of Maui County Beach book back in the late 1980s, I actually went down to Kalapapa because they have beaches down there. And I walked up and down the trail on several different occasions and spent the night down there and talked with the superintendent. I, you know, talked to the patients, and I did my thing checking out all the beaches on the peninsula. So the beaches are what took me there initially, but once I got there, of course, it was just total immersion on everything that had happened there from, you know, 1866 on.
Well, I know the State Archives is trying to digitize all the records from all the residents there, so they will be available to relatives so that if you wanted to do research that you would be able to do that.
Oh, well, that's really good information. Thank you for letting me know. I didn't realize that. You know, what I tried to do was not to repeat what everybody else had already done and, you know, the research that had gone on before me, but I focused on the Hawaiian language newspapers as a rather unique resource, and I think I got a lot of information to add to the overall history of Kalapapa.
Now, I know they're working on a memorial of the 8,000 residents who live down there. Do you think you're going to try and make it down there when they dedicate that, knowing that you have a connection there?
Oh, of course. Yeah, the memorial's in a field right across from Father Damien's church over in Kalawao, his St. Philomeno church. Just on the Malka side of it, there's a nice big open field there, and that's the site for the memorial, which right now they're fundraising for. But anyway, yeah, I'd love to get down there if they can accommodate everybody that wants to go.
Have you been there to try and find your great-great-grandmother's tombstone? I don't know if she's buried there.
She is buried there, but she's in an unmarked grave. So as far as I know, the site of her burial is not recorded anywhere. I haven't been able to track it down through any of the resources that are available right now. There are other patients, too, that are in unmarked graves, but I believe the memorial is going to, as long as they can document that someone was there and someone died there, their name will still be included on the memorial, whether they found a gravestone for them or not. One thing that you might be interested to know is that in the history of leprosy in the Hawaiian Islands, we all think that everybody was sent to Kalaupapa beginning in 1866, and that's the only place that there were settlements. But from the very beginning, the patients and the families lobbied for local segregation, and they wanted to establish leprosy settlements on the main islands, and not just at Kalapapa and Molokai. So anyway, there were a lot of recommendations in the legislature, and there were even field trips over to Kauai, to Kalalau Valley, to see if that would work as an alternate site for local segregation. But in the end, none of the alternate sites were approved, and everybody just got sent over to the Kalapapa Peninsula. You know, one of the things that really came through to me is that the majority of the patients realized that they were sent there for the rest of their lives, and they weren't negative about it. I mean, there were a lot of things that they didn't like. They wished they could change it. They wished they could have had local segregation, as opposed to just this one place, one remote area that nobody else could get to. But they made the best of it there. They tried to be positive, and I think that comes through loud and clear when you read the articles and you read what they've written, that they just tried to live their lives as best they could and made the best out of a not so good situation. And you know, the Hawaiian language newspapers, they started off in 1834, even well before the settlement was established over there. And the Hawaiian language newspapers kept the patients, the residents at Kalapapa, informed of exactly what was happening on the other Hawaiian islands, you know, outside of the Kalaupapa Peninsula. So all of the holidays, you know, whether it was the 4th of July or New Year's, or even in the 1900s, like May Day, King Kamehameha Day, all of those holiday celebrations, they were celebrating them there with parades and sporting events and all kinds of stuff, just like the rest of the folks in Hawaii were. So yeah, they were upbeat, they were positive. They just tried to make the best of where they were.
And author John Clark talking about his most recent book, Kalaupapa Place Names, and the parallels with our COVID-19 isolation.